Chapter 38 Miller. The observation deck looked out over the Nauvoo as the behemoth slowly came together. Miller sat on the edge of a soft couch, his fingers laced over his knee, his gaze on the immense vista of the construction. After his time on Holden's ship, and before that in Eros, with its old-style closed architecture, a view so wide seemed artificial. The deck itself was wider than the Rocinante, and decorated with soft ferns and sculpted ivies. The air recyclers were eerily quiet, and even though the spin gravity was nearly the same as Ceres's, the Coriolis felt subtly wrong. He'd lived in the Belt his whole life, and he'd never been anywhere that was designed so carefully for the tasteful display of wealth and power. It was pleasant, as long as he didn't think about it too much. He wasn't the only one drawn to the open spaces of Tycho. A few dozen station workers sat in groups or walked through together. An hour before, Amos and Alex had gone by, deep in their own conversation. So he wasn't entirely surprised when, standing up and walking back toward the docks, he saw Naomi sitting by herself with a bowl of food cooling on a tray at her side. Her gaze was fixed on her hand terminal.
"Hey," he said.
Naomi looked up, recognized him, and smiled distractedly. "Hey," she said. Miller nodded toward the hand terminal and shrugged a question. "Comm data from that ship," she said. It was always that ship, Miller noticed. The same way people would call a particularly god-awful crime scene that place. "It's all tight beam, so I thought it wouldn't be so hard to triangulate, but..."
"Not so much?"
Naomi lifted her eyebrows and sighed. "I've been plotting orbits," she said, "but nothing's fitting. There could be relay drones, though. Moving targets the ship system was calibrated for that would send the message on to the actual station. Or another drone, and then the station, or... who knows?"
"Any data coming off Eros?"
"I assume so," Naomi said. "But I don't know that it would be any easier to make sense of than this."
"Can't your OPA friends do something?" Miller asked. "They've got more processing power than one of these handhelds. Probably have a better activity map of the Belt, too."
"Probably," she said. He couldn't tell if she didn't trust this Fred that Holden had given them over to, or just needed to feel like the investigation was still hers. He considered telling her to back off it for a while, to let the others carry it, but he didn't see he had the moral authority to make that one stick.
"What?"
Naomi said, an uncertain smile on her lips. Miller blinked. "You were laughing a little," Naomi said. "I don't think I've ever seen you laugh before. I mean, not when something was funny."
"I was just thinking about something a partner of mine told me about letting cases go when you got pulled from them."
"What did he say?"
"That it's like taking half a shit," Miller said.
"Had a way with words, that one."
"It was all right for an Earther," Miller said.
And something tickled at the back of his mind. Then a moment later,
"Ah, Jesus, I may have something."
Havelock met him in an encrypted drop site that lived on a server cluster on Ganymede. The latency kept them from anything like real-time conversation. It was more like dropping notes, but it did the trick. The waiting made Miller anxious. He sat with his terminal set to refresh every 3 seconds. "Would you like anything else?" the woman asked. "Another bourbon?"
"That'd be great," Miller said, and checked to see if Havelock had replied yet.
He hadn't. Like the observation deck, the bar looked out on the Nauvoo, though from a slightly different angle. The great ship looked foreshortened, and arcs of energy lit it where a layer of ceramic was annealing. A bunch of religious zealots were going to load themselves into that massive ship,
that small, self-sustaining world, and launch themselves into the darkness between the stars. Generations would live and die in it. And if they were mind-bendingly lucky enough to find a planet worth living on the end of the journey, the people who came out of it would never have known Earth, or Mars, or the Belt. They'd be aliens already. And if whatever had made the protomolecule was out there to greet them, then what? Would they all die, like Julie had? There was life out there. They had proof of it now. And the proof came in the shape of a weapon. So what did that tell him? Except that maybe the Mormons deserved a little warning about what they were signing their great-grandkids up for. He laughed to himself when he realized that was exactly what Holden would say. The bourbon arrived at the same moment his hand terminal chimed. The video file had a layered encryption that took almost a minute to unpack. That alone was a good sign. The file opened and Havelock grinned out from the screen. He was in better shape than he'd been on Ceres, and it showed in the shape of his jaw. His skin was darker, but Miller didn't know if it was purely cosmetic or if his old partner had been basking in false sunlight for the joy of it. It didn't matter. It made the Earther look rich and fit. "Hey, buddy," Havelock said. "Good to hear from you. After what happened with Shadid and the OPA, I was afraid we were going to be on different sides now. I'm glad you got out of there before the shit hit the fan." "Yeah, I'm still with Protogen. And I've got to tell you, these guys are kind of scary. I mean, I've worked contract security before, and I'm pretty clear when someone's hardcore. These guys aren't cops. They're troops. You know what I mean? Officially, I don't know dick about a belt station. But you know how it is. I'm from Earth. There are a lot of these guys who gave me shit about Ceres. Working with the vacuum heads. That kind of thing. But the way things are here, it's better to be on the good side of the bad guys. It's just that kind of job." There was an apology in his expression. Miller understood. Working in some corporations was like going to prison. You adopted the views of the people around you. A belter might get hired on, but he'd never belong. Like Ceres, just pointed the other way. If Havelock had made friends with a set of inner planet mercs who spent their nights off curb-stomping belters outside bars, then he had. But making friends didn't mean he was one of them. "So, off the record, yeah, there's a black op station in the belt. I hadn't heard it called Thoth, but it could be. Some sort of very scary deep research and development lab. Heavy science crew, but not a huge place. I think discreet would be the word. Lots of automated defenses, but not a big ground crew. I don't need to tell you that leaking the coordinates would get my ass killed out here. So wipe the file when you're done, and let's not talk again for a long, long time." The data file was small. 3 lines of plain text orbital notation. Miller put it into his hand terminal and killed the file off the Ganymede server. The bourbon still sat beside his hand, and he drank it off neat. The warmth in his chest might have been the alcohol, or it might have been victory. He turned on the hand terminal's camera. "Thanks. I owe you one. Here's part of the payment. What happened on Eros? Protogen was part of it, and it's big. If you get a chance to drop your contract with them, do it. And if they try to rotate you out to that black op station, don't go." Miller frowned. The sad truth was that Havelock was probably the last real partner he'd had. The only one who'd looked on him as an equal. As the kind of detective Miller had imagined himself to be. "Take care of yourself, partner," he said. Then ended the file, encrypted it, shipped it out. He had the bone-deep feeling he wasn't ever going to talk to Havelock again. He put through a connection request to Holden. The screen filled with the captain's open, charming, vaguely naive face. "Miller," Holden said. "Everything okay?"
"Yeah, great. But I need to talk to your Fred guy. Can you arrange that?"
Holden frowned and nodded at the same time. "Sure, what's going on?"
"I know where Thoth Station is," Miller said.
"You know what?"
Miller nodded.
"Where the hell did you get that?"
Miller grinned. "If I gave you that information and it got out, a good man would get killed," he said. "You see how that works?"
It struck Miller, as he, Holden, and Naomi waited for Fred, that he knew an awful lot of inner-planet types fighting against the inner planets. Or at least not for them. Fred, supposedly a high-ranking OPA member, Havelock, three-quarters of the crew of the Rocinante, Juliet Mao. It wasn't what he would have expected. But maybe that was short-sighted. He was seeing the thing the way Shadid and Protogen did. There were two sides fighting, that was true enough, but they weren't the inner planets versus the Belters. They were the people who thought it was a good idea to kill people who looked or acted differently against the people who didn't. Or maybe that was a crap analysis, too. Because given the chance to put the scientist from the Protogen pitch, the board of directors, and whoever this Dresden piece of shit was into an airlock, Miller knew he'd agonize about it for maybe half a second after he blew them all into vacuum. Didn't put him on the side of angels.
"Mr. Miller, what can I do for you?"
Fred, the Earther OPA. He wore a button-down shirt and a nice pair of slacks. He could have been an architect, or a mid-level administrator for any number of good, respectable corporations. Miller tried to imagine him coordinating a battle.
"You can convince me that you've really got what it takes to kill the Protogen station," Miller said. "Then I'll tell you where it is."
Fred's eyebrows rose a millimeter.
"Come into my office," Fred said.
Miller went. Holden and Naomi followed. When the doors closed behind them, Fred was the first to speak.
"I'm not sure exactly what you want from me. I'm not in the habit of making my battle plans public knowledge."
"We're talking about storming a station," Miller said. "Something with damn good defenses and maybe more ships like the one that killed the Canterbury. No disrespect intended, but that's a pretty tall order for a bunch of amateurs like the OPA.
Miller?" Holden said. Miller held up a hand, cutting him off.
"I can give you the directions to Thoth Station," Miller said. "But if I do that, and it turns out you haven't got the punch to see this through, then a lot of people die and nothing gets resolved. I'm not up for that."
Fred cocked his head, like a dog hearing an unfamiliar sound. Naomi and Holden shared a glance that Miller couldn't parse.
"This is a war," Miller said, warming to the subject. "I've worked with the OPA before, and frankly, you folks are a lot better at little guerrilla bullshit than at coordinating anything real. Half of the people who claim to speak for you are crackpots who happen to have a radio nearby. I see you've got a lot of money. I see you've got a nice office. What I don't see, what I need to see, is that you've got what it takes to bring these bastards down. Taking out a station isn't a game. I don't care how many simulations you've run, this is real now. If I'm going to help you, I need to know you can handle it."
There was a long silence. "Miller," Naomi said, "you know who Fred is, right?"
"The Tycho mouthpiece for the OPA," Miller said. "That doesn't draw a whole lot of water with me."
"He's Fred Johnson," Holden said. Fred's eyebrows rose another millimeter. Miller frowned and crossed his arms. "Colonel Frederick Lucius Johnson," Naomi said, clarifying. Miller blinked.
"The butcher of Anderson Station?" he said.
"The same,"
Fred said. I have been talking with the Central Council of the OPA. I have a cargo ship with more than enough troops to secure the station. Air support is a state-of-the-art Martian torpedo bomber.
The Rossi? Miller said.
The Rocinante, Fred agreed.
And while you may not believe it, I actually know what I'm doing.
Miller looked at his feet, then up toward Holden.
That, Fred Johnson? He said.
I thought you knew, Holden said.
Well, don't I feel like the flaming idiot, Miller said.
It'll pass, Fred said.
Was there anything else you wanted to demand?
No, Miller said, and then,
yes. I want to be part of the ground assault. When we take that station crew, I want to be there.
Are you sure? Fred said. Taking out a station isn't a game. What makes you think you have what it takes?
Miller shrugged. One thing it takes is the coordinates, Miller said. I have got those.
Fred laughed. Mr. Miller, if you'd like to go down to this station and have whatever's waiting for us down there try to kill you along with the rest of us, I won't stand in your way.
Thanks, Miller said.
He pulled up his hand terminal and sent the plain text coordinates to Fred.
There you go. My source is solid, but he's not working from first-hand data. We should confirm before we commit.
I'm not an amateur, Colonel Fred Johnson said, looking at the file.
Miller nodded, adjusted his hat, and walked out.
Naomi and Holden flanked him. When they reached the wide, clean public hallway, Miller looked to his right, catching Holden's eyes.
Really? I thought you knew, Holden said.
8 days later, the message came. The cargo ship Guy Molinari had arrived, full up with OPA soldiers. Havelock's coordinates had been verified. Something was sure as hell out there, and it appeared to be collecting the tight beam data from Eros. If Miller wanted to be part of this, the time had come to move out. He sat in his quarters in the Rocinante for what was likely the last time. He realized with a little twinge, equal parts surprise and sorrow, that he was going to miss the place. Holden, for all his faults and Miller's complaints, was a decent guy. In over his head and only half aware of the fact, but Miller could think of more than one person who fit that bill. He was going to miss Alex's odd, affected drawl and Amos's casual obscenity. He was going to wonder if and how Naomi ever worked things out with her captain. Leaving was a reminder of things he'd already known. That he didn't know what would come next. That he didn't have much money. And that while he was sure he could get back from Thoth Station, where and how he went from there was going to be improvisation. Maybe there would be another ship he could sign on with. Maybe he'd have to take a contract and save up some money to cover his new medical expenses. He checked the magazine in his gun, packed his spare clothes into the small, battered pack he'd taken on the transport from Ceres. Everything he owned still fit in it. He turned off the lights and made his way down the short corridor toward the ladder lift. Holden was in the galley, twitching nervously. The dread of the coming battle was already showing in the corners of the man's eyes.
Well, Miller said, here we go, eh?
Yep, Holden said.
It's been a hell of a ride, Miller said.
Can't say it's all been pleasant, but...
Yeah. Tell the others I said goodbye, Miller said.
Will do, Holden said. Then, as Miller moved past him toward the lift, so, assuming we all actually live through this, where should we meet up? Miller turned.
I don't understand, he said.
Yeah, I know. Look, I trust Fred, or I wouldn't have come here. I think he's honorable, and he'll do the right thing by us. That doesn't mean I trust the whole OPA. After we get this thing done, I want the whole crew together, just in case we need to get out in a hurry. Something painful happened under Miller's sternum. Not a sharp pain, just a sudden ache. His throat felt thick. He coughed to clear it.
As soon as we get the place secure, I'll get in touch, Miller said.
Okay, but don't take too long. If Thoth Station has a whorehouse left standing, I'm going to need help prying Amos out of it. Miller opened his mouth, closed it, and tried again.
Aye, aye, Captain, he said, forcing a lightness into his voice.
Be careful, Holden said. Miller left, pausing in the passageway between ship and station until he was sure he'd stopped weeping, and then making his way to the cargo ship and the assault. Chapter 39 Holden. The Rocinante hurtled through space like a dead thing, tumbling in all three axes. With the reactors shut down and all the cabin air vented, it radiated neither heat nor electromagnetic noise. If it weren't for its speeding toward Thoth Station significantly faster than a rifle shot, the ship would be indistinguishable from the rocks in the belt. Nearly 500,000 kilometers behind it, the Guy Molinari screamed the Rossi's innocence to anyone who would listen, and fired its engines in a long, slow deceleration. With the radio off, Holden couldn't hear what they were saying, but he'd helped write the warning, so it echoed in his head anyway. Warning. Accidental detonation on the cargo ship Guy Molinari has broken large cargo container free. Warning to all ships in its path. Container is traveling at a high speed and without independent control. Warning. There had been some discussion about not broadcasting at all. Because Thoth was a black station, they'd be using only passive sensors. Scanning every direction with radar or LADAR would light them up like a Christmas tree. It was possible that with its reactor off, the Rocinante could sneak up on the station without being noticed. But Fred had decided that if they were somehow spotted, it would be suspicious enough to probably warrant an immediate counterattack. So, instead of playing it quiet, they decided to play it loud, and count on confusion to help them. With luck, the Thoth Station security systems would scan them and see that they were in fact a big chunk of metal flying on an unchanging vector and lacking apparent life support, and ignore them just long enough to let them get close. From far away, the station's defense systems might be too much for the Rossi. But up close, the maneuverable little ship could dart around the station and cut it to pieces. All their cover story needed to do was buy them time while the station security team tried to figure out what was going on. Fred, and by extension everyone in the assault, was betting that the station wouldn't fire until they were absolutely certain they were under attack. Protogen had gone to a lot of trouble to hide their research lab in the belt. As soon as they launched their first missile, their anonymity was lost forever. With the war going on, monitors would pick up the fusion torch trails and wonder what was up. Firing a weapon would be Thoth Station's last resort. In theory. Sitting alone inside the tiny bubble of air contained in his helmet, Holden knew that if they were wrong, he'd never even realize it. The Rossi was flying blind. All radio contact was down. Alex had a mechanical timepiece with a glow-in-the-dark face and a to-the-second schedule memorized. They couldn't beat Thoth at high-tech, so they were flying as low-tech as you could get. If they'd missed their guess and the station fired on them, the Rossi would be vaporized without warning. Holden had once dated a Buddhist who said that death was merely a different state of being, and people only feared the unknown that lay behind that transition. Death without warning was preferable, as it removed all fear. He felt he now had the counter-argument. To keep his mind busy, he ran through the plan again. When they were practically close enough to spit on Thoth Station, Alex would fire up the reactor and do a braking maneuver at nearly 10 G's. The guy Molinari would begin spraying radio static and laser clutter at the station to confuse its targeting package for the few moments the Rossi would need to come around on an attack vector. The Rossi would engage the station's defenses, disabling anything that could hurt the Molinari, while the cargo ship moved in to breach the station's hull and drop off her assault troops. There were any number of things wrong with this plan. If the station decided to fire early, just in case, the Rossi could die before the fight even started. If the station's targeting system could cut the Molinari's static and laser clutter, they might begin firing while the Rossi was still getting into position. And even if all that worked perfectly, there was still the assault team, cutting their way into the station and fighting corridor to corridor to the nerve center to take control. Even the inner planet's best marines were terrified of breaching actions, and for good reason. Moving through unfamiliar metal hallways without cover while the enemy ambushed you at every intersection was a good way to get a lot of people killed. In training simulations back in the Earth Navy, Holden had never seen the Marines do better than 60% casualties. And these weren't inner-planet Marines with years of training and state-of-the-art equipment. They were OPA cowboys, with whatever gear they could scrape together at the last minute. But even that wasn't what really worried Holden. What really worried him was the large, slightly warmer-than-space area just a few dozen meters above Thoth Station. The Molinari had spotted it, and warned them before cutting them loose. Having seen the stealth ships before, no one on the Rossi doubted that this was another one. Fighting the station would be bad enough, even up close, where most of the station's advantages were lost. But Holden didn't look forward to dodging torpedo fire from a missile frigate at the same time. Alex had assured him that if they could get in close enough to the station, they could keep the frigate from firing at them for fear of damaging Thoth, and that the Rossi's greater maneuverability would make it more than a match for the larger and more heavily armed ship. The stealth frigates were a strategic weapon, he'd said, not a tactical one. Holden hadn't said, "Then why do they have one here?" Holden moved to glance down at his wrist, then snorted with frustration in the pitch black of the ops deck. His suit was powered down, chronometers and lights both. The only system on in his suit was air circulation, and that was strictly mechanical. If something got fouled up with it, no little warning lights would come on. He'd just choke and die. He glanced around the dark room and said, "Come on, how much longer?" As if in answer, lights began flickering on through the cabin. There was a burst of static in his helmet. Then Alex's drawling voice said, "Internal comms online." Holden began flipping switches to bring the rest of the systems back up. "Reactor," he said.
2 minutes,
Amos replied from the engine room.
"Main computer."
30 seconds to reboot, Naomi said, and waved at him from across the ops deck. The lights had come up enough for them to see each other.
"Weps?"
Alex laughed with something like genuine glee over the comm.
"Weapons are coming online," he said. "As soon as Naomi gives me back the targeting comp, we'll be cocked, locked, and ready to rock."
Hearing everyone check in after the long and silent darkness of their approach reassured him. Being able to look across the room and see Naomi working at her tasks eased a dread he hadn't even realized he'd been feeling.
"Targeting should be up now," Naomi said.
"Roger that," Alex replied. "Scopes are up, radar up, lidar up."
"Shit, Naomi, you seen this?"
"I see it," Naomi said. "Captain, getting engine signatures from the stealth ship, they're powering up too."
"We expected that," Holden said.
"Everyone stay on task."
1 minute, Amos said.
Holden turned on his console and pulled up his tactical display. In the scope, Thoth Station turned in a lazy circle while the slightly warm spot above it got hot enough to resolve a rough hull outline.
"Alex, that doesn't look like the last frigate," Holden said. "Does the Rosie recognize it yet?"
"Not yet, Cap, but she's working on it."
30 seconds, Amos said. "Getting Ladar searches from the station," Naomi said. "Broadcasting chatter."
Holden watched on his screen as Naomi tried to match the wavelength the station was using to target them, and began spraying the station with their own laser comm array, to confuse the returns.
15 seconds, Amos said.
"Okay, buckle up, kids," Alex said. "Here comes the juice."
Even before Alex had finished saying it, Holden felt a dozen pinpricks as his chair pumped him full of drugs to keep him alive during the coming deceleration. His skin went tight and hot, and his balls crawled up into his belly. Alex seemed to be speaking in slow motion.
5, 4, 3, 2.
He never said 1. Instead, 1,000 kilos sat on Holden's chest and rumbled like a laughing giant as the Rosie's engine slammed on the brakes at 10 G's. Holden thought he could actually feel his lungs scraping the inside of his ribcage as his chest did its best to collapse. But the chair pulled him into a soft, gel-filled embrace, and the drugs kept his heart beating and his brain processing. He didn't black out. If the high G maneuvering killed him, he'd be wide awake and lucid for the entire thing. His helmet filled with the sound of gurgling and labored breathing, only some of which was his own. Amos managed part of a curse before his jaw was clamped shut. Holden couldn't hear the Rosie shuddering with the strain of her course change, but he could feel it through the seat. She was tough. Tougher than any of them. They'd be long dead before the ship pulled enough G's to hurt itself. When relief came, it came so suddenly that Holden almost vomited. The drugs in his system stopped that, too. He took a deep breath, and the cartilage of his sternum clicked painfully back into place.
"Check in," he muttered. His jaw hurt.
"Comm array targeted,"
Alex replied immediately. Thoth Station's comm and targeting array was the first item on their target priority list.
"All green," Amos said from below.
"Sir," Naomi said, a warning in her voice.
"Shit, I see it," Alex said.
Holden told his console to mirror Naomi so he could see what she was looking at. On her screen, the Rosie had figured out why it couldn't identify the stealth ship. There were 2 ships. Not 1 large and ungainly missile frigate that they could dance around and cut to pieces at close range. No. That would have been too easy. These were 2 much smaller ships parked close together to trick enemy sensors. And now, they were both firing their engines and splitting up.
"Okay," Holden thought. "New plan."
"Alex, get their attention," he said. "Can't let them go after the Molinari."
"Roger,"
Alex replied.
"1 away."
Holden felt the Rosie shudder as Alex fired a torpedo at 1 of the 2 ships. The smaller ships were rapidly changing speed and vector, and the torpedo had been fired hastily and from a bad angle. It wouldn't score a hit, but the Rosie would be on everyone's scope as a threat now, so that was good. Both of the smaller ships darted away in opposite directions at full burn, spraying chaff and laser chatter behind them as they went. The torpedo wobbled in its trajectory, and then limped away in a random direction.
"Naomi, Alex, any idea what we're facing here?" Holden asked.
"Rosie still doesn't recognize them, sir," Naomi said.
"New hull design,"
Alex said over her.
"But they're flying like fast interceptors. Guessing a torpedo or 2 in the belly and a keel-mounted railgun."
Faster and more maneuverable than the Rosie, but they'd be able to fire in only 1 direction.
"Alex, come around to—"
Holden's order was cut short when the Rosinante shuddered and jumped sideways, hurling him into the side of his restraints with rib-bruising force.
"We're hit,"
Amos and Alex yelled at the same time.
Station shot us with some sort of heavy Gauss cannon, Naomi said.
Damage? Holden said.
Went clean through us, Cap, Amos said. Galley in the machine shop. Got yellows on the board, but nothing that'll kill us.
Nothing that'll kill us sounded good, but Holden felt a pang for his coffee maker.
Alex, Holden said. Forget the little ships. Kill that comrade.
Roger,
Alex replied, and the Rossi lurched sideways as Alex changed course to begin his torpedo run on the station.
Naomi, as soon as the first one of those fighters comes around on his attack run, give him the comm laser in the face, full strength, and start dropping chaff.
Yes, sir, she replied.
Maybe the laser would be enough to screw up his targeting system for a few seconds.
Station's opening up with the PDCs, Alex said. This'll get a mite bumpy.
Holden switched from mirroring Naomi's screen to watching Alex's. His panel filled with thousands of rapidly moving balls of light and Thoth Station rotating in the background. The Rossi's threat computer was outlining the incoming point defense cannon fire, with bright light on Alex's HUD. It was moving impossibly fast, but at least with the system doing a bright overlay on each round, the pilot could see where the fire was coming from, and which direction it was traveling. Alex reacted to this threat information with consummate skill, maneuvering away from the PDC's direction of fire in quick, almost random movements that forced the automated targeting of the point defense cannons to adjust constantly. To Holden, it looked like a game. Incredibly fast blobs of light flew up from the space station in chains, like long and thin pearl necklaces. The ship moved restlessly, finding the gaps between the threads and dodging away to a new gap before the strands could react and touch her. But Holden knew that each blob of light represented a chunk of Teflon-coated tungsten steel with a depleted uranium heart, going thousands of meters per second. If Alex lost the game, they'd know it when the Rosinante was cut to pieces. Holden almost jumped out of his skin when Amos spoke.
Shit, Cap, got a leak somewhere. Three port maneuvering thrusters are losing water pressure. Going to patch it.
Copy, Amos. Go fast, Holden said.
You hang on down there, Amos, Naomi said. Amos just snorted. On his console, Holden watched as Thoth Station grew larger on the scope. Somewhere behind them, the two fighters were probably coming about. The thought made the back of Holden's head itch, but he tried to keep focus. The Rossi didn't have enough torpedoes for Alex to fire shot after shot at the station from far off, and hope one made it through the point defense fire. Alex had to bring them in so close that the cannons couldn't shoot the torpedo down. A blue highlight appeared on the HUD surrounding a portion of the station's central hub. The highlighted portion expanded into a smaller subscreen. Holden could make out the dishes and antennas that made up the comm and targeting array.
One away, Alex said,
and the Rossi vibrated as her second torpedo was fired. Holden shook violently in his restraints, and then slapped back into his chair as Alex took the Rossi through a series of sudden maneuvers and then slammed down the throttle to evade the last of the PDC fire. Holden watched his screen as the red dot of their missile streaked toward the station and struck the comm array. A flash blanked out his screen for a second, and then faded. Almost immediately, the PDC fire stopped. Holden was cut off by Naomi yelling,
Bogey One is fired. Two fast movers.
Holden flipped back to her screen and saw the threat system tracking both fighters and two smaller and much faster objects moving toward the Rossi on an intercept course.
Alex, Holden said.
Got it, Chief. Going defensive.
Holden slammed back into his chair again as Alex poured on the speed. The steady rumble of the engine seemed to stutter, and Holden realized he was feeling the constant fire of their own PDCs as they tried to shoot down the pursuing missiles.
Well, fuck, Amos said almost conversationally.
Where are you?
Holden asked, then flipped his screen to Amos's suit camera.
The mechanic was in a dimly illuminated crawl space, filled with conduit and piping. That meant he was between the inner and outer hulls. In front of him, a section of damaged pipe looked like snapped bones. A cutting torch floated nearby. The ship bounced violently, banging the mechanic around in the tight space. Alex swooped over the comm.
"Missiles did not impact," he said. "Tell Alex to stop jerking her around," Amos said. "Makes it hard to hang onto my tools."
"Amos, get back to your crash couch," Naomi said.
"Sorry, boss,"
Amos replied with a grunt as he yanked one end of the broken pipe free.
"If I don't fix this and we lose pressure, Alex won't be able to turn to starboard anymore. Bet that'll fuck us up good."
"Keep working, Amos," Holden said over Naomi's protests. "But hang on, this is going to get worse."
Amos said, "Roger that."
Holden switched back to Alex's HUD display. "Holden," Naomi said. There was fear in her voice. "Amos is going to get..."
"He's doing his job, do yours. Alex, we have to take these two out before the Molinari gets here. Get me an intercept on one of them and let's kick its ass."
"Roger that, Cap," Alex said. "Going after Bogey 2. Could use some help with Bogey 1.
"Bogey 1 is Naomi's priority," Holden said. "Do what you can to keep it off our backside while we kill his friend."
"Roger,"
Naomi said in a tight voice. Holden switched back to Amos's helmet camera, but the mechanic seemed to be doing fine. He was cutting the damaged pipe free with his torch, and a length of replacement pipe floated nearby.
"Strap that pipe down, Amos," Holden said.
"All respect, Captain," Amos said, "but safety standards can kiss my ass. I'm getting this done fast and getting out of here."
Holden hesitated. If Alex had to make a course correction, the floating pipe could turn into a projectile massive enough to kill Amos, or break the Rossi.
"It's Amos," he told himself. "He knows what he's doing."
Holden flipped to Naomi's screen as she poured everything the comm system had at the small interceptor, trying to blind it with light and radio static. Then he went back to his tactical display. The Rossi and Bogey 2 flew toward each other at suicidal speeds. As soon as they passed the point where incoming torpedo fire could be avoided, Bogey 2 launched both his missiles. Alex flagged the two fast movers for the PDCs and kept up his intercept course, but didn't launch missiles.
"Alex, why aren't we shooting?" Holden said.
"Gonna shoot his torpedoes down, then get in close and let the PDCs chew him up," the pilot replied.
"Why?"
"We've only got so many torpedoes and no resupply. No call to waste them on these munchkins."
The incoming torpedoes arced forward on Holden's display, and he felt the Rossi's PDCs firing to shoot them down.
"Alex," he said, "we didn't pay for this ship. Feel free to use it up. If I get killed so you can save ammo, I'm going to put a reprimand in your permanent file."
"Well, you put it that way," Alex said. Then, "one away."
The red dot of their torpedo streaked off toward Bogey 2. The incoming missiles got closer and closer, and then one disappeared from the display. Alex said, "Shit," in a flat voice. And then the Rosinante slammed sideways hard enough that Holden broke his nose on the inside of his helmet. Yellow emergency lights began rotating on all the bulkheads, though, with the ship evacuated of air, Holden mercifully couldn't hear the klaxons that were trying to sound throughout it. His tactical display flickered, went out, and then came back after a second. When it came back up, all three torpedoes, as well as Bogey 2, were gone. Bogey 1 continued to bear down on them from astern.
"Damage!"
Holden yelled, hoping the comm was still up. "Major damage to the outer hull," Naomi replied. "4 maneuvering thrusters gone, 1 PDC non-responsive. We've also lost O2 storage, and the crew airlock looks like it's slag."
"Why are we alive?"
Holden asked while he flipped through the damage report and then over to Amos's suit camera.
"The fish didn't hit us," Alex said. "The PDC got it, but it was close. Warhead detonated and sprayed us down pretty good."
It didn't look like Amos was moving. Holden yelled,
"Amos, report."
Yeah, still here, Captain. Just hanging on in case we get knocked around like that again. I think I busted a rib on one of the hull braces, but I'm strapped down. Good fucking thing I didn't waste time with that pipe, though."
Holden didn't take time to answer. He flipped back to his tactical display and watched the rapidly approaching Bogey 1. It had already fired its torpedoes, but at close range it could still cut them apart with its cannon.
"Alex, can you get us turned around and get a firing solution on that fighter?" he said.
"Working on it. Don't have much maneuverability,"
Alex replied, and the Rossi began rotating with a series of lurches. Holden switched to a telescope and zoomed in on the approaching fighter. Up close, the muzzle of its cannon looked as big around as a corridor on Ceres, and it appeared to be aimed directly at him.
"Alex," he said. "Working on it, Chief, but the Rossi's hurtin'."
The enemy ship's cannon flared open, preparing to fire.
"Alex, kill it. Kill it, kill it, kill it."
"One away," the pilot said, and the Rocinante shuddered.
Holden's console threw him out of the scope view and back to the tactical view automatically. The Rossi's torpedo flew toward the fighter at almost the same instant that the fighter opened up with its cannon. The display showed the incoming rounds as small red dots, moving too fast to follow.
"Income,"
he shouted, and the Rocinante came apart around him. Holden came too. The inside of the ship was filled with flying debris and bits of superheated metal shavings that looked like slow-motion showers of sparks. With no air, they bounced off walls and then floated, slowly cooling like lazy fireflies. He had a vague memory of one corner of a wall-mounted monitor detaching and bouncing off three bulkheads in the world's most elaborate billiard shot, then hitting him right below the sternum. He looked down, and the little chunk of monitor was floating a few centimeters in front of him, but there was no hole in his suit. His guts hurt. The ops console chair next to Naomi had a hole in it. Green gel slowly leaked into small balls that floated away in the zero-G. Holden looked at the hole in the chair and the matching hole in the bulkhead across the room and realized that the round must have passed within centimeters of Naomi's leg. A shudder swept through him, leaving him nauseated in its wake.
"What the fuck was that?"
Amos asked quietly.
"And how about we don't do it anymore?"
"Alex?" Holden said.
"Still here, Cap,"
the pilot replied, his voice eerily calm.
"My panel's dead," Holden said. "Did we kill that son of a bitch?"
"Yeah, Cap, he's dead. About half a dozen of his rounds actually hit the Rossi. Looks like they went through us from bow to stern. That anti-spalling webbing on the bulkheads really keeps the shrapnel down, doesn't it?"
Alex's voice had started shaking. He meant, "We should all be dead."
"Open a channel to Fred, Naomi," Holden said.
She didn't move.
"Naomi?"
"Right, Fred," she said, then tapped on her screen. Holden's helmet was filled with static for a second, then with Fred's voice.
"Guy Molinari here. Glad you guys are still alive."
"Roger that. Begin your run. Let us know when we can limp over to one of the station's docks."
"Roger," Fred replied. "We'll find you a nice place to land. Fred out."
Holden pulled the quick release on his chair's restraints and floated toward the ceiling, his body limp.
"Okay, Miller. Your turn."
Chapter 40. Miller.
"Oi, Pampa," the kid in the crash couch to Miller's right said. "Popped seal, you and Bang, hey?"
The kid's combat armor was gray-green, articulated pressure seals at the joints and stripes across the front plates where a knife or flechette round had scraped the finish. Behind the face mask, the kid could have been 15. His hand gestures spoke of a childhood spent in vacuum suits, and his speech was pure belt Creole.
Yeah, Miller said, raising his arm. Saw some action recently. I'll be fine.
Fine's fine is fine, the kid said. But you hold to the full car, and Neto can pass the air out to you, eh?
No one on Mars or Earth would have the first clue what you're saying, Miller thought. Shit, half the people on Ceres would be embarrassed by an accent that thick. No wonder they don't mind killing you.
Sounds good to me, Miller said. You go first, and I'll try to keep anyone from shooting you in the back.
The kid grinned. Miller had seen thousands like him. Boys in the throes of adolescence, working through the normal teenage drive to take risks and impress girls. But at the same time, they lived in the belt, where one bad call meant dead. He'd seen thousands. He'd arrested hundreds. He'd watched a few dozen picked up in hazmat bags. He leaned forward to look down the long rows of close-packed, gimbaled crash couches that lined the gut of the Guy Molinari. Miller's rough estimate put the count at between 90 and 100 of them. So by dinner, chances were good he'd have seen a couple dozen more die.
What's your name, kid?
Giagu.
Miller, he said, and gave the kid his hand to shake.
The high-quality Martian battle armor Miller had taken from the Rocinante let his fingers flex a lot more than the kid's. The truth was, Miller was in no shape for the assault. He was still getting occasional waves of inexplicable nausea, and his arm ached whenever the medication level in his blood started thinning out. But he knew his way around a gun, and he probably knew more about corridor-to-corridor fighting than 9/10 of the OPA rock jumpers and ore hogs like Giagu, who were about to go in. It would have to be good enough. The ship's address system clicked once.
This is Fred.
We've had word from air support, and we're green for breach in 10 minutes. Final checks start now, people.
Miller sat back in his couch. The clicking and chattering of 100 suits of armor, 100 sidearms, 100 assault weapons filled the air. He'd been over his own enough times now. He didn't feel the urge to do it again. In a few minutes, the burn would come. The cocktail of high-G drugs was kept on the ragged edge, since they'd be going straight from the couches into a firefight. No point having your assault force more dope than necessary. Julie sat on the wall beside him, her hair swirling around her like she was underwater. He imagined the dappled light flashing across her face. Portrait of the young pinnace racer as a mermaid. She smiled at the idea, and Miller smiled back. She would have been here, he knew, along with Giagu and Fred and all the other OPA militia, patriots of the vacuum. She'd have been in a crash couch, wearing borrowed armor, heading into the station to get herself killed for the greater good. Miller knew he wouldn't have. Not before her. So, in a sense, he'd taken her place. He'd become her. They made it, Julie said, or maybe only thought. If the ground attack was going forward, it meant the Rocinante had survived. At least long enough to knock out the defenses. Miller nodded, acknowledging her and letting himself feel a moment's pleasure at the idea, and then thrust gravity pushed him into his couch so hard that his consciousness flickered, and the hold around him dimmed. He felt it when the braking burn came, all the crash couches spinning to face the new up. Needles dug into Miller's flesh. Something deep and loud happened. The Guy Molinari ringing like a gigantic bell. The breaching charge. The world pulled hard to the left, the couch swinging for the last time as the assault ship matched the station's spin. Someone was shouting at him.
Go, go, go!
Miller lifted his assault rifle, tapped the sidearm strapped to his thigh, and joined the press of bodies making for the exit. He missed his hat. The service corridor they'd cut into was narrow and dim. The schematics the Tycho engineers had worked up suggested they wouldn't see any real resistance until they got into the manned parts of the station. That had been a bad guess. Miller staggered in with the other OPA soldiers in time to see an automatic defense laser cut the first rank in half.
Team 3, gas it, Fred snapped in all their ears, and half a dozen blooms of thick, white, anti-laser smoke burst into the close air. The next time a defense laser fired, the walls flashed with mad iridescence, and the smoke of burning plastic filled the air, but no one died. Miller pressed forward and up a red metal ramp. A welding charge flared, and a service door swung open. The corridors of Thoth Station were wide and roomy, with long swaths of ivy grown in carefully tended spirals, niches every few feet with tastefully lit bonsai. Soft light, the pure white of sunlight, made the place feel like a spa or a rich man's private residence. The floors were carpet. The HUD in his armor flickered, marking the path the assault was meant to take. Miller's heart stepped up to a fast, constant flutter, but his mind seemed to grow perfectly still. At the first intersection, a riot barrier was manned by a dozen men in Protogen security uniforms. The OPA troops hung back, using the curve of the ceiling as cover. What suppressing fire there was came in kneecap low. The grenades were perfectly round, not even a hole where the pin had been pulled. They didn't roll as well on the soft industrial carpet as they would have on stone or tiling, so one of the three went off before it reached the barrier. The concussion was like being hit in the ears with a hammer. The narrow, sealed corridors channeled the blast back at them almost as much as at the enemy. But the riot barrier shattered, and the Protogen security men fell back. As they all rushed forward, Miller heard his new, temporary compatriots whooping with the first taste of victory. The sound was muffled, as if they were a long way away. Maybe his earpieces hadn't dampened the blast as much as they were supposed to. Making the rest of the assault with blown eardrums wouldn't be easy. But then Fred came on, and his voice was clear enough.
"Do not advance. Hold back."
It was almost enough. The OPA ground force hesitated, Fred's orders pulling at them like a leash. These weren't troops. They weren't even cops. They were a belter irregular militia. Discipline and respect for authority weren't natural to them. They slowed. They got careful. So, rounding the corner, they didn't walk into the trap. The next corridor was long and straight, leading, the HUD suggested, to a service ramp up toward the control center. It looked empty, but a third of the way to the curve horizon, the carpeting started to fly apart in ragged tufts. One of the boys beside Miller grunted and went down.
"They are using low shrapnel rounds and bouncing them off the curve," Fred said into all their ears at once. "Bank shot ricochet. Stay low and do exactly as I say."
The calm in the Earther's voice had more effect than his shouting had. Miller thought he might have been imagining it, but there also seemed to be a deeper tone, a certainty. The butcher of Anderson Station, doing what he did best, leading his troops against the tactics and strategies he'd helped create back when he'd been the enemy. Slowly, the OPA forces moved forward, up one level and then the next, then the next. The air grew hazy with smoke and ablated paneling. The wide corridors opened into broad plazas and squares, as airy as prison yards, with the Protogen forces in the guard towers. The side corridors were locked down, local security trying to channel them into situations where they could be caught in crossfire. It didn't work. The OPA forced open the doors, taking cover in display-rich rooms, something between lecture halls and manufacturing complexes. Twice, unarmored civilians, still at their work despite the ongoing assault, attacked them when they entered. The OPA boys mowed them down. Part of Miller's mind, the part that was still a cop and not a soldier, twitched at that. They were civilians. Killing them was, at the very least, bad form. But then, Julie whispered in the back of his mind, "No one here is innocent." And he had to agree. The operations center was a third of the way up the station's slight gravity well, defended better than anything they had seen so far. Miller and five others, directed by the all-knowing voice of Fred, took cover in a narrow service corridor, keeping a steady suppressing fire up the main corridor toward ops, and making sure no Protogen counterattack would go unanswered. Miller checked his assault weapon, and was surprised to see how much ammunition was left.
"Oi, Pampa," the kid next to him said,
and Miller smiled, recognizing Giogu's voice behind the face mask.
"Day's the day, pasa?"
"I've seen worse," Miller agreed, then paused. He tried to scratch his injured elbow, but the armor plates kept anything satisfying from happening.
"Bekastu?" Giogu asked.
"No, I'm fine. It's just this place. I don't get it. It looks like a spa, and it's built like a prison."
The boy's hands shifted in query.
Miller shook his fist in response, thinking through the ideas as he spoke.
"It's all long sight lines and locked down side passages," Miller said. "If I was going to build a place like this, I'd..."
The air sang, and Giogu went down, his head snapping back as he fell. Miller yelped and wheeled. Behind them in the side corridor, two figures in Protogen security uniform dove for cover. Something hissed through the air by Miller's left ear. Something else bounced off the breastplate of his fancy Martian armor like a hammer blow. He didn't think about raising his assault weapon. It was just there, coughing out return fire like an extension of his will. The other three OPA soldiers turned to help.
"Get back," Miller barked. "Keep your fucking eyes on the main corridor. I'm on this."
Stupid, Miller told himself. Stupid to let them get behind us. Stupid to stop and talk in the middle of a firefight. He should have known better. And now, because he'd lost focus, the boy was... laughing? Giogu sat up, lifted his own assault weapon, and peppered the side corridor with rounds. He got unsteadily to his feet, then whooped like a child who'd just gotten off a thrill ride. A wide streak of white goo stretched from his collarbone up across the right side of his face mask. Behind it, Giogu was grinning. Miller shook his head.
"What the hell are they using crowd suppression rounds for?" he said to himself as much as the boy. "They think this is a riot?"
"Forward teams," Fred said in Miller's ear. "Get ready. We're moving in 5, 4, 3, 2, go."
"We don't know what we're getting into here," Miller thought as he joined the sprint down the corridor, pressing toward the assault's final target.
A wide ramp led up to a set of blast doors done in wood grain veneer. Something detonated behind them, but Miller kept his head low and didn't look back. The press of bodies jostling in their ragtag armor grew thicker, and Miller stumbled on something soft, a body in Protogen uniform.
"Give us some room," a woman at the front shouted.
Miller pushed toward her, cutting through the crowd of OPA soldiers with his shoulder and elbow. The woman shouted again as he reached her.
"What's the problem?" Miller shouted.
"I can't cut through this bitch with all these dick lickers pushing me," she said, lifting a cutting torch already glowing white at the edge. Miller nodded and slid his assault rifle into the sling on his back. He grabbed two of the nearest shoulders, shook the men until they noticed him, and then locked his elbows with theirs.
"Just need to give the tech some room," Miller said,
and together they waded into their own men, pushing them back. How many battles, all through history, fell apart at moments like this? He wondered. The victory all but delivered, until Allied forces started tripping over each other. The welder popped to life behind him, the heat pressing at his back like a hand, even in armor. At the edge of the crowd, automatic weapons gurgled and choked.
"How's it going back there?" Miller shouted over his shoulder.
The woman didn't answer. Hours seemed to pass, though it couldn't have been more than 5 minutes. The haze of hot metal and aerosolized plastic filled the air. The welding torch turned off with a pop. Over his shoulder, Miller saw the bulkhead sag and shift. The tech placed a card-thin jack into the gap between plates, activated it, and stood back. The station around them groaned as a new set of pressures and strains reshaped the metal. The bulkhead opened.
"Come on," Miller shouted, then tucked his head and moved through the new passageway, up a carpeted ramp, and into the ops center.
A dozen men and women looked up from their stations, eyes wide with fear.